welcome back to the State of Choice podcast that is our very own Ed Choice policy and advocacy team. I am Joey Magana, and we have here Ed, Catherine, Nathan. Caitlin is out on assignment, so she's not with us today, but we thought we'd start with a theme since it's April. I would say it's raining here in Oklahoma. It's actually snowing at the moment, but April showers bringing May flowers, and kind of going with fruits of the labor, which is, there's a lot of questions about starting kind of with an incremental approach versus kind of a full universal bill. And then also kind of just the accountability myth of loading programs on the front end with accountability, quote unquote, and then, you know, on the back end, making that very difficult in practice to run a program. But first, we'll kind of go through some state updates because there has been some things kind of moving right along. Nathan, why don't we start with you? What's going on in the South?
Louisiana is rocking and rolling. We had a House Education hearing yesterday on HB 745, which is Representative Julie Emerson's education savings account bill. Last week, we heard in Senate Education, Senator Edmonds' education savings account bill. They're similar. There's a couple of differences with some amendments here and there, but for the most part, they're the similar bills. And so we will see which one the governor will sign. But for the most part, people are excited about it. We had a ton of people testify in support more so than oppose, which was a good sign. The bill yesterday passed favorably with no objection. And so it will move on to its next committee. The Senate bill from last week will also move on to its next committee. And so hopefully we can move things along quickly while still being able to sort of be prudent on some of the things that the bill needs when it comes to some amendments. So the governor's still very strongly supporting this. He's very vocal. He tweeted yesterday about it. And so a lot of exciting stuff going on. Another state rocking and rolling is South Carolina. They introduced a bill to expand their education savings account that they passed last session. So they're now expanding it to universal. And that bill has passed the House floor, moved on very quickly. And so now it's on its Senate side. And it will, I believe it was referred to Senate Education, I believe this morning. And so it will hopefully be scheduled there soon and go to the governor's desk, and we'll have universal school choice in South Carolina as well. So that's it for my state updates.
Yeah. Love that South Carolina is building off of their success from last year and going just full-blown universal. Catherine, you also have a couple of southern states, if I'd be remiss if I didn't say that. One of which is Tennessee that's moving right along. What's going on there?
Yeah, so in Tennessee, we're really seeing an exciting time. We've got House Bill 1183 and Senate Bill 503, which have both passed their House Education and Senate Education committees. So they're on to Senate Finance next week. And both bills lead to universal ESAs for the students of Tennessee. And we're just really working to fine-tune those bills. And like you discussed earlier, Joey, a limit regulations that might be onerous to parents who want to be a part of this program, and really get this program set up properly so that as many parents as possible can enroll their students and have a successful outcome when they choose which school they want their kid to go to.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Ed, in the Northeast, I know New Hampshire has continually expanded its program, which is great. I think we've talked in the past about their 500% expansion. How's all that going?
So Joey, it may be snowing down in Oklahoma, but it's raining up here in DC, and I know the storm's headed up to my home region of New England tomorrow, including New Hampshire, so hopefully that is a sign of flowers to come. Out in New Hampshire, just to recap, earlier this year, the House passed a bill to expand the state's Education Freedom Account program from 350 to 500% of the federal poverty line. That would bring eligibility to about 69 to 70%. Now let's remember, when the program first passed in 2021, eligibility was just a third of the state. This is a huge expansion, moving it all the way up to over two-thirds. This would be a huge win for families if this makes it over the finish line. It is now being considered in the Senate. We are not totally sure on when it will be considered. It's to be seen when it will be placed on the calendar. However, what I will say is Governor Chris Sununu is fully in favor of the 500% expansion, as is the New Hampshire Education Freedom Coalition. So it's to be seen what happens in New Hampshire, but let's hope for those flowers coming in May, or maybe even April. So,
yeah, right. Well, continuing on with that theme, let's kind of dive into that of, you know, April showers bringing May flowers and kind of fruits of the labor, so to speak. You know, pre-pandemic, there was a lot of incremental programs that were both proposed and enacted out there. Several states have done that. A lot started off with means testing, meaning that, you know, it was for low income. And then you had kind of a wave of special needs programs. I know here in Oklahoma, back in 2006, that was our very first program, was a special needs voucher. A lot of states have done that. And then, you know, post-pandemic, we've really kind of had this push to more universal, meaning every kid is eligible. So give us some examples in states that you work in where, you know, incremental versus universal and why that's important and kind of what you're hearing from both legislators and partners and parents alike.
Well, Joey, the first one that comes to mind for me, especially because we reference this state often, a lot of the data that is available comes out of this state, is Florida. You know, every state, when it comes to many categories, but especially when it comes to education freedom, wants to sort of mimic the Florida model when it comes to parental rights. And so thinking back to sort of this incremental approach and April showers bringing May flowers, you know, back in 2001, when the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship was enacted, you know, Governor Bush was sort of a pioneer in a lot of these programs. And it was a means-tested program available to low-income students. And of course, after years and years of students utilizing this program, the legislature constantly going back and forth and trying to expand it, they finally did expand it to a universal ESA just last session. So that's the first one that comes to mind for me. I know that a lot of the aspects of their program is sort of good policy. And so we reference it a lot. A lot of the data available comes from Florida. And so I'd be remiss if we didn't mention the Florida programs.
Yeah, Florida's obviously has always been a great example. And as you rightly say, pioneered by then Governor Jeb Bush. And Florida is an example where they had a myriad of different programs and options. And then I think it was last year, right, where they consolidated a lot of those to make it more universal for all families. Arizona, Catherine, is another state where, you know, they started off with charter schools, open enrollment, and then I think it was a special needs ESA, a means tested ESA, and then obviously went full universal back in 2021. What have we seen out of Arizona?
Just similar growth in demand. So what's very common in a lot of these states that enact an initial program, even if it's very small, is they're very popular and parents like it. And so what often happens is you don't want a family only having one of their children apply for a program and get in. So many of these programs we urge to have some sort of sibling reciprocity allowed so that students that maybe go to one private school or go to one very specialized charter school are able to have their whole family go to the same school. And so this expansion kind of naturally occurs in even a very small program. And talking to Arizona, I mean, they go back to 1997 of a low-income tax credit scholarship, which eventually then, of course, as we all know, led to universal. It's similar in Arkansas. If you look, they started with a very select program called the Succeed Scholarship for students with disabilities, foster families, or if one of your parents was involved in active or reserve military. And that program was very successful. Parents were very involved with it. And that was kind of helpful to that gaining of momentum to push for universal, which Arkansas now has.
Well, and speaking of that, Ed, as I mentioned before, New Hampshire is a great example of where they started with a means-tested ESA, still means-tested, but over the years, it's expanded and expanded and expanded. And obviously, I don't think legislators would do that if families didn't want that. But talk to us about kind of the fruits of the labor for New Hampshire's program.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to reiterate, when New Hampshire's Education Freedom and Cup program was enacted in 2021, it was just at 300% federal poverty. So again, about a third of students were eligible for the program to start. Last year, we saw a 50% increase in the federal. So it was increased from 300 to 350% of the federal poverty line. And now lawmakers are pushing for 500%. It's important to know here that New Hampshire is the most popular program in the country. It has seen the highest number of new families joining the program year over year in the last year. That's why we awarded them that superlative this year on behalf of EdChoice. But like to echo what Catherine said, I think a lot of lawmakers are seeing just how much of a demand there is for education freedom, for having an option for those kids that have different needs. You know, like we always say, public schools are working for a lot of people. That's fine. But there are obviously a lot of kids who have different needs. Every kid's unique. And those families, there's a demand for choice among those families. And I think that's what's being reflected in a lot of these expansions.
Yeah. Well, and I know we've talked about this in the past as well, but let's talk about April showers bringing May weeds or, you know, undesirable things on the lawn. And that is regulation, which comes in the form of accountability. The way we talk about it here at EdChoice is a very big difference between accountability and transparency. We're all for transparency. We want folks to know what these funds are spent on, what's available, how the program works, all of those things. But as far as accountability, I mean, the thing that we always say is you either trust the parents or you don't. I mean, they're the most accountable to their own children, and we've got to trust parents. So again, going back to Arizona, Catherine, I mean, I think that's the only program in the country where there is zero regulation, meaning there's no kind of means testing. So there's no kind of qualification. Every kid is eligible. I think that there's several hundred vendors they can choose from. So, universal and uses as well as funding. So there's no kind of cap on funding, things like that. And there's no testing requirements. There's no accreditation requirements, which all may sound great. But again, if we trust parents, then we let them decide what's best for their kids, whatever that educational model looks like, whatever curriculum it is, learning environment, things like that.
Yeah. And you don't want to hamstring the marketplace, right? So when these programs are set up, there's the accountability that's, of course, sometimes put on the student. Usually there's like a test requirement. Then there's the accountability put on a parent for being confused about how to use a program and what they're allowed to spend funding on. So there's a learning curve there. But then there's also the provider part. And that's really important too. You want private schools and unique specialized schools to operate in these programs, because without them, we don't give our students the best products. We need exciting and innovative education solutions to be able to operate in these programs. Or you have a problem. Some states have very intense regulations on providers, and that makes providers not want to be a part of the program because they don't want to jump through a significant amount of hoops to provide education when they're afraid their funding might be removed and there's a lack of stability in that market. So you really just don't want to put too much regulation there, or you won't get great providers and great schools that want to participate.
Yeah, I mean, that's the unintended consequence, right? Is if you have a lot of regulation and quote unquote accountability, it's going to stifle that innovative free market. And Ed, I know you've dug a lot into Milton Friedman, and that's who started this organization. It was the Milton Friedman Foundation when it first began. And then obviously we switched to EdChoice, but his kind of a vision, correct me if I'm wrong, is to have a complete free market, competitive marketplace where, again, parents have the ability and the power to choose. And then the market grows from there. And the competitive environment, as we all know from research, shows public school students actually benefit from that because the public schools are then forced to get better, basically, or they lose their kids. But talk to us about that. I mean, again, having a free marketplace and not a burdensome type system.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the analogies that Milton-like analogy, I'll say, I forget if it was exactly a supermarket, but it's a very similar example nevertheless. Imagine if you lived in your community and you were assigned to a supermarket. You could only go to that one supermarket, regardless of, let's say the produce was better at the supermarket two towns over. They had better produce, better meats, but you had to go to your assigned supermarket. And that market knew that you had to go to that assigned supermarket. So what incentive would they have to improve their services? So different education. The glory of a free market, free enterprise system, where families can choose where they want to go, beyond district lines, that is the greatest accountability. Parents are the greatest accountability. They have the power to walk away. If a school is in this ideal, in this system that Milton spoke to, if families are not satisfied with the education they're receiving at a school or an education provider, they can walk away. And if enough families walk away, that school closes. That's the largest form of accountability that we have. In the current system, if the public school is underperforming, they throw more money at it. And oftentimes we don't see improvement. And of course, we're always rooting for improvement. And sometimes there are improvements, sometimes there aren't. So again, we talk a lot about accountability. And I think, again, the point to take home here is parents are the greatest form of accountability, being able to walk away.
Yeah, for sure. And just to make it clear, we're sector agnostic, as we like to say here at EdChoice, whether a parent chooses their local public school or a different public school or a charter school, a private school, a homeschool, whatever it may be, pod school. Like there's more and more innovative models out there now, thanks to the handful of states that started these programs years ago and then went universal in the past, 4 years.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of families, as we've said before, a lot of families are satisfied with their public schools. They're going to stay in their public schools, and that's great. I went to public school. I was lucky enough to go to a public school that did meet my needs. We're out fighting for families to have options who are in schools, but the schools are not meeting their needs. But yeah, no, public schools, if there are some needs, it's great. That's part of choice.
Yeah. And again, research shows when there's a robust choice program in a state, those public schools actually get better. And what we attribute that to is competition, the free market. Nathan, you know, Alabama was the first state this year to pass a significant school choice program, which was their, I think we're calling it their tax credit ESA. But there was a lot of deep conversation over whether it should be heavily regulated or not. So what were some of the things you were hearing both from policymakers and partners advocating for regulation, and then kind of talk about how we responded to some of that?
Yeah, well, so Alabama is interesting just because, you know, comparing it to, you know, conversations that with other advocates and legislators like Louisiana, you know, you have a lot of back and forth with, you know, should we require these schools to be accredited? Should we require more testing? Should we require more, you know, health and safety checks here and there? Versus in Alabama, it was more so on the lines of advocates and legislators kind of having that divide. And because the governor's office took the lead and the legislator sort of pushed it through very quickly, thankfully, you know, there wasn't a ton of debate on that. A lot of the advocates tried to get them to sort of take a step back and look at accreditation a different way, you know, kind of comparing it to Florida or Arizona, saying, hey, look, these are some of the best programs in the country and they don't have accreditation. That's why they can grow so quickly. And that's why they can sort of cultivate these newer markets. But, you know, there in terms of advocates on the side of choice, you know, some maybe didn't care as much about the accreditation issue. But of course, because we're Milton Friedman and we want the best possible open market that we can get, then, you know, we were there advocating for no accreditation or at least a very broad definition of what that could look like so that schools can and parents can have more options. So it's interesting. Hopefully they can reevaluate the program in the next couple of years, hopefully a success, and be able to open that up more comfortably, looking at the data and saying, okay, well, we haven't had, you know, widespread fraud, and we haven't had, you know, money mismanagement. We can actually feel more comfortable with opening it up. Versus in Louisiana, and I was going to say this a bit earlier, talking about sort of the overregulation and why that doesn't work, and looking at Arizona and why it does work. You know, Louisiana is a great example of this because our scholarship program passed back in 2008, Governor Jindal, sort of a pioneer in the school choice, especially in Louisiana. You know, that program passed not so regulated relative to some of the programs that, you know, it was compared to that in 08. But when they expanded it out statewide in 2010, the legislature, you know, tacked on all these regulatory barriers. They saw the consequences there or not, but probably not. But I mean, they added on testing mandates where you had to take the state test, the LEAP. They added on sort of enrollment mandates. The government sort of had a little more control over admissions and enrollment, and just a lot of bad ideas collectively onto this program. And we saw the consequences of that years later. You know, Dr. Wolf at the University of Arkansas has a wonderful report on this program, him and his team. And it shows that, yeah, of course, you know, the academic outcomes of students in this program at these schools weren't so promising. And it's because of the regulatory barriers. It's because of, you know, they were required to take the state test, even though they left the very system that required the state test. You know, they were trying to leave that behind and find new ways. And so another consequence of that is a lot of schools in Louisiana did not participate in the program because they did not want to have to deal with their, you know, the government's hand in how they ran their school. And so you did have low participation when it came to schools, and then you didn't have very good outcomes when it came to academics. And opponents, as we all know, love to point this out. You know, when they're arguing ESAs and school choice, even today, they say, well, look at Louisiana. They're the perfect example of how this stuff doesn't work. And then, you know, we should say back to them, no, it's the perfect example of why regulation doesn't work. It's the perfect example of why government doesn't work, you know, when they have a heavy hand in this program. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about that in Louisiana this session while we're working on this ESA. And so I just think it's so important to look at states like Arizona, like Florida, and go back to Milton's vision of all this and say, you know, you think you want to prevent all this bad things from happening, but it's actually going to be worse by having a heavy hand of government in all this. So,
yeah, as you've all said, I mean, unintended consequences are you stifle the market, and, you know, families are going to be less likely to participate. Vendors are going to be less likely to participate. And then it's just not a great system. You know, another thing too is public schools are obviously very heavily regulated. I don't think anybody would argue with that. But one of the fundamental differences we're going to have with some folks on the public side is government run versus private run. And we just have a fundamental belief that when you leave it to families, which is the private side, we just believe that they're going to be much more innovative and attuned to, again, their own kids and how they learn. I've never talked to a parent who has two or more kids that say, oh yeah, my two kids or my four kids all learn the same way. It just doesn't happen. And so to have the flexibility and the options to craft an education to that kid, I think has changed a lot of lives over time and will continue to do so. So as in the case with Alabama, we'll see how things work out. I mean, I think it's going to be a challenge to implement. And for a lot of groups like ours, we're now focusing a little bit more on implementation because passing a program is great, but seeing it through and making sure it's as successful as possible takes work, time, and effort. And so we work with families and vendors and administrators alike to make sure that, you know, families have the best options. So great conversation and discussion. Hopefully our April showers do bring some May flowers, both figuratively and literally. Hopefully it's not too hot of a summer. But anyway, thanks for being with us. We'll see you all next month. We'll have some more updates and some more topics to talk about.